Welcome to the 7th episode of EXP Boosting. I am Vanessa, also known as Pontato.
And I'm Cindy, also known as Sakura Dragon. And this week we will interview Jeff Granito. He's one of my artist heroes, and I met him at the Wonderground Gallery in downtown Disney. So he does a lot of work with Disney for their park merchandise and just a lot of their holiday stuff. And we're really excited to be able to share this with you today and learn all of the lessons that he went through.
His art is amazing, and we did.
Have you even seen it?
I have. I did research.
Oh, okay, just wondering.
I did research. Yeah.
He has very great advice for people who are looking to do whatever it is that they love.
Yes.
Yes.
Let's jump in.
Okay.
Welcome
Cute
to
intro.
Welcome to EXP Boosting, where our mission is to... Wow, it's been a while.
Oh my god.
Welcome to EXP Boosting, where we encourage people to just press start. And today, we have Jeff Granito. Did I say that correctly?
Yep.
Joining us today. He is a wonderful artist who has worked on several... worked with several different kinds. I'm so sorry.
You haven't done your research.
I have it. I just haven't looked at it today. Okay. He's worked with Nickelodeon, Disney. I have it up. Give me
this. Hold on. Okay, forget it. You lost your power.
Oh, man.
So, I'm going to introduce Jeff.
I did research you last week.
Jeff is an artist that I met at the Wonderground Gallery. He was artist in residence. And if you walk around Disneyland, then you're definitely going to have seen his work. He does a lot of the art for the merchandise, the popcorn buckets, and just like scattered here and there. There's no way you can miss his art. And we are lucky enough to have him agree to come interview today. So let's start.
Hi.
So Jeff, the first question we always ask the people we interview is, what games are you playing? And it could be like even a mobile game or...
Okay. So this is where we announce my age.
What? No. We can't.
I'm old, and the only game... Well, there's two games I play. It's Words with Friends on my phone.
I'm still playing that.
Yeah, see, there you go. Thank you for making me feel older. And okay. I throw toys to my dog. Those are my only games.
Aww. That's a good game,
Those
too.
Those are good games. Are you good at Words with Friends?
I am. Well, I grew
He's
up...
He's an artist.
What does that mean? Yeah. Is that assuming I'm good or bad?
You already have the advantage.
Really? Artists are known to be good with words?
Yeah, because then they can, like, put things together from, you know, nothing.
I am actually... I'm good at Scrabble. I've been playing that my whole life. So that's why I would play that on the board, you know, before. And so that's like the most like Scrabble. And then
Do they still make that?
I played with my mom all growing up, and I can play this. I can play Words with Friends with my mom.
Oh, that's nice.
That's cute.
Yeah, I know.
That means your mom also knows how to use tech, which is awesome.
Yeah, no, she plays it way more than I do. I go in waves, you know. And like there'll be times when I get super obsessed with it and then not. And I just started playing a couple days ago, picked it up again. Because generally, you know, I'll go to Instagram and like kind of do work, you know. But I've been so I wanted to escape a little bit. So I'll play the game.
That's good. You haven't escaped.
Because you've been busy.
Yeah.
Holiday season is so hard.
It is. It's really busy. It's really fun and it's worthwhile and everything, but it can just get a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
But at least I feel like everybody knows that now. I don't feel like that was always the case, but everyone I've talked to is like, oh, well, it's the holiday season. So, you know, whatever.
You guys are like working overtime and at 5x speed.
Yeah, totally. So at least everybody gets it, which is nice.
Yeah. Okay. So on the subject of your work, Jeff, one of the things that have always really impressed me is that you got to do and like work with big animation studio, like companies that do animation and film without having experience in animation. You know how, I guess for people listening, if they're not already aware, that in entertainment, which is kind of like what you study if you want to do animation or art for movies and films, it's this world where it's very, everyone needs to feel like they're being really smart or that they know everything or they're the best at what they do. But you never went that direction, and yet you're still getting to work with them without having to deal with you know what I'm talking about.
I do. No, I've never dealt with animators or animation. To be honest, that always seems kind of daunting and like a lot of work, you know?
Yes, intimidating is the word I'm looking for. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I grew up, it was all by hand. And so the thought of drawing the same character with a slight movement, like thousands and thousands of times, really didn't interest me, to be perfectly honest. So, so there you go.
And you found a way to do something you love without taking that typical path. Like,
well, I kind of fell into it. To be perfectly honest, I fell into it. I like consumer stuff. You know, I like dealing with something that's going straight to the public, but that I never really tried to do that. So I think that's kind of a thing where I fell into something that I like, but I didn't really try to do this. And it's not like I would have, it wasn't my dream to do this, to be perfectly honest. I just fell into it.
Mm. So, do you ever feel like you're at a disadvantage because of your lack of industry experience?
I've never once thought that, actually. Oh. I've never, until now, I didn't think I was.
You're not. I'm just wondering.
Don't think that now. Wait.
No, don't think that. It is something that I think about often because, like, it wasn't until recently I was trying to figure out, like, as an artist, which of the millions of routes do I want to take?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I just, the one thing that was always deterring me from going into animation is like, I'm not good enough, because I feel like people who excel in animation, they're just so knowledgeable in everything, right? You have to be so knowledgeable in everything, but there's no disadvantage of being really good at what you do, even if it's not like animation style.
To be honest, kind of what I do is everything but the characters. I mean, I do end up doing characters now, but my path has been to do licensing art. And the art of licensing art is actually not getting in the way of the characters. So you're creating environments, you're creating graphics that highlight the characters that somebody else draws. So, you know, with Instagram and all this, I've been able to... people know what I do, but in general, no one would ever know what I do. But my goal has always been to just make sure that somebody else's work shines. So that's kind of what I do. And now it's changed a little bit, but that's kind of what I do.
Yeah. And
that is really interesting.
And I think it's important for it could easily be intimidating to go into like a field with a bunch of other experts, but that also means that you're bringing in something that those experts might not have. They learn things a certain way, but you bring this whole new perspective, which is really valuable as well.
Well, yeah, they're not learning how to create the backgrounds for their characters. They're not learning how to do stuff. So it's very different, you know.
Right.
Generally, character artists are fantastic at character. They're, you know, they can do the gesture, they can do everything, and they shouldn't have to worry about all this other stuff. So I don't worry about doing what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then also merchandising is a completely separate pool of knowledge that you have to become an expert in to do merch, like, you know.
It's, you know, I've been in a very, been very fortunate enough to have people I work with, and I'll use the word partners, people who have been very open about the business side of what I've been participating in. So, you know, I'll do the art, but I've also tried to be very aware of like, what happens after I send them art. So I've been able to learn from their experience. And my goal was always to say, okay, so here's the art. Now, what are you going to do with it? So I want to know what's successful, what's not successful, so I can learn and improve. So that was my goal. But in doing that, I kind of was able to observe what they do and learn a little bit about that business.
Because you are working as a team. When you're helping someone design a product, like, you also need to know for their benefit, which is what is working for the product and what is not.
Absolutely.
Next time you tackle that, it's better.
Yeah, for sure. And the more involved I am with other aspects, I feel like the more I can offer something that works, you know?
Right. So when you, okay, so with that experience, you took that and then you went to your first convention, and I just wanted to know how that went for you and what were some things that you wish you had done differently or something that you were surprised that went like extremely well.
That's a good question. Let me think about this. Let me back up a little bit. It was my first convention, but I've been doing like shows, as you know. So I've, you know, without really being in the eye of anybody, I've been able to learn some stuff. Again, you know, trying to learn along the way. It's been my experience that being somewhere in between polished and home, you know, just like homemade, somewhere in between is the magic mixture for me. So I was happy with how the booth turned out in that it didn't look like I was there saying, hey, I know very much because I don't. It was my first one. And I don't feel like I look like a total hack either. So I was happy with that.
Was this the Palm Springs Comic-Con?
Well, no, it was the Designer Con. I've done other little things, but the Designer Con was my...
We're talking the most recent Designer Con.
Yeah, yeah.
You looked great, Jeff. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, you know, it's hard. I didn't know what to expect. I'm doing this, but I wanted to look... I don't want it to look like I don't know what I'm doing, but I also don't want to come off like I know what I'm doing more than I don't.
It did read as Jeff knows exactly what he's doing.
Oh, well, that's good. It's good. That's good. Okay. I don't, but it's good. And then I loved the show. I loved meeting people. That was my favorite part. If I'd say what didn't go great, I was happy with everything. Does that sound bad? I don't think I'd change much.
Did you forget anything?
Did I forget something? You know, I had the advantage here because I got to set up on Thursday and the show didn't start till Friday and I went home on Thursday. So yeah, I forgot a lot of stuff, but I was able to get it. So that's, I was kind of a cheat.
That's part of the process. You were smart. Some people roll in on Friday, right? They don't make that effort to show up the day before. And then when they don't have something, they have to scramble.
I didn't do that. I went, when we got there for the show, that was our third time there. So
at the Anaheim Convention Center.
Yes. Yeah. We had gone twice before getting that, you know, before starting the show to set up different stuff. So that was really great to have that extra time.
Okay, so for somebody who's doing a convention for their first time,
yeah,
what would you recommend? Like,
asking you the best way to get in and out. That was you saved us by letting us know that there was the help getting in and out. So that's what it would have done differently. I carried everything in myself when somebody could have helped.
I got really lucky that the lady at the gate, like letting us in, she asked me and I was like, oh, there's this service and it's free. Okay, tell me more. I got lucky, or else I wouldn't have known.
Oh, you didn't know either. Well, it saved us. I mean, I can't even tell you how grateful we are because
that's why we're here to help each other.
Yes, that was awesome.
So try to find someone who's kind of done a convention before and maybe reach out and ask for some advice.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, I was happy. I was happy. I feel like at least I went in kind of trying to figure out what to do. And so I had a limited expectation. And so I feel like I got out of it what I needed to.
Oh, and then, so I guess Palm doesn't notice, but I caught her palm. Vanessa doesn't notice. But so it was it Saturday night where we I went to Downtown Disney for dinner, and I just saw I'm walking down, and then at the Wonderground Gallery, I see Jeff working overtime signing prints. I was like, well, he worked a 12-hour day, and then he goes to Wonderground and does more work.
That was hard. But I knew going in that it was going to be hard because Mickey's birthday just happened to be that day. And so everybody knew that it was going to be hard for everybody. So that's just the way it was, you know. You can't change. You couldn't change the convention. And you couldn't change what day Mickey's birthday was. That was that.
But it sounds like you made a ton of people happy that day.
Oh, I'm glad. You know what? I had a fun time because there were several people who were at the con who came over afterwards to see us at Wonderground, and we went out afterwards, and that was super fun. Aww. So super tired, but fun all the less.
And then you had to show face really early the next morning.
That was hard.
I'm sure, Jeff.
But, you know, my sister-in-law came out. My daughter was there. So there was four of us working the booth. So that was...
Oh, you had ample help, too.
We had lots of help. Yeah.
Oh, that's another pro tip is if you do a convention is lots of help.
We had lots of help. We were very fortunate. I mean, I have a lot of great helpers. So that was good. You know what I would have done differently? I've learned. I would bring water. They didn't sell water until.
Oh. Yes. I've helped Cindy with a convention and I forgot to bring water. Bring water. Bring lots of water.
There's vending machines, but they don't turn them on until everyone's there. That's the strangest thing. I'm sitting here bringing all this stuff in, dying of thirst. And they're like, oh, just when the convention starts, when you have to sit in your booth is when we'll sell you some water.
Yeah. And snacks.
And snacks. Well, I brought snacks. I didn't bring water.
Wait, what?
Maybe chairs too. Not every convention provides chairs. You might want to sit down within 12 hours.
Yeah, totally.
I brought
a bench, so I had that.
You make it sound like I tortured you.
No. You came prepared. You had chairs. I'm just thinking of the things of if you did not have them, what they would be. I'm actually hyping you up. You know.
Okay. Vanessa comes to help me often. She's like one of the few people who are trustworthy help, right? Where you can leave her by herself and expect things to be in one piece when you come back from your break.
What happens otherwise? They steal stuff or something?
No one's ever stolen. But like you come back, like I've had one occasion where like I came back from the bathroom and my sister didn't know how to open my money bag.
Oh.
Like she was looking for a zipper. There was two zippers, one on the front and one on the back, but she didn't see the back side. And so I come out and I was like, thank goodness I had only been gone for like 5 minutes.
Think of all the money you would have made.
So from my research last week, I'm trying to save face, I saw that you received a bachelor's in history, but you ended up pursuing a bachelor of fine arts in graphic design after. What kind of pushed you towards that change in pursuing something new?
Well, I was the kid who was always drawing growing up. Whenever there was art class or something, I was always like good at it and everything, but like you're talking about people with animation, I never knew anybody who was an animator. I knew nothing about artists or careers or anything. So I didn't really take art seriously as an option. So I thought you either had to be a fine artist or a cartoonist, and neither of those were really my thing. So I went to school for history because I thought, well, that's, you know, that makes more sense. And I kind of thought I was going to go into advertising. So I was just going to get my bachelor's and then, you know, I'd learn my trade or something like that. But I interned during my summers at advertising agencies.
And they suck.
What?
They suck.
Well, you know, it's just different. I realized I'm not an advertising person for sure. But I did see people doing other stuff. And then I saw graphic design, didn't know what that was. And that looked appealing to me. So that kind of was like, oh, I guess that seems kind of cool. And then I, after school, I was going to go to New York and just kind of work and then take night classes at, school out there. But I took art class that I took a summer class at Art Center, and I loved it. It was like, oh, this is what I can do. Mm-hmm. And so I figured it out after. You know, I don't think I could have done research before. I don't think there's anything I could have done differently except just fall, you know, just serendipitously find something before. But it just so happened after I went to college.
Right. And so, go ahead.
Sorry. at the time, Jeff, I have no idea how old you are. I think you've told me, but like, I don't think. I have no memory of it.
I'm 48.
Okay, so yeah, definitely. Thank you for sharing. Because graphic design didn't become a thing until like late 90s, early 2000s, right?
Well, as everyone thinks of it now, that's true. But it was a thing back then. It was graphics really don't depend on computer. There was graphic design before there was computers. And that's how I learned it, without computers. So I think most people today think graphic design means something you do on a computer, but really graphic design is just something that's reproduced. Hmm. And the way you used to reproduce it was through cameras, and you know, there was, you would create something with type and you'd put it together, you know, paper.
Yeah, you cut it up and photocopy it. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, so that's how I learned. And you know, you used films and you cut out pictures and you painted borders, and that's how I learned it. And computers came out like in the middle of college, in the middle of my degree, we started, computers showed up. And so we didn't learn computers, but they happened as a tool that we could kind of play with and integrate into what we were doing. And we all just kind of learned it together, you know?
That's really cool.
But I didn't take a computer class or anything. I've never taken a class on any computer thing. Mm. So I was kind of at the forefront of the computer thing, which is good. I had Illustrator 1, so that's how I learned Illustrator. And then every time something new comes out, I'd learn something new. And so I didn't have that awful thing that it must be now to try to learn Illustrator with so many tools and so many options.
I'm laughing because, like, you know, that I recently picked it up and had to learn it.
Yeah.
And there's so many moments where you're struggling just to make such a simple shape that you want to pull out your hair, or
totally,
you have to like put your computer down and take a walk because you're just so frustrated.
Well, I did go through that too, because, you know, I drawing with the mouse and little, you know, those little Bezier curves is hard. You know, now I know, now it's easier for me than using a pencil, but it's hard. And I walked away and I was frustrated, but I had a couple jobs where I just ink drawings over and over and over and over again. So that's kind of how I learned. And then I made pretty good money off of each one. So that's how I learned how to use the curves. But it's exhausting. And I tell you what, the new Illustrator is really kicking my butt, to be honest.
That surprises me. Because Jeff, you are like if we had to rank people in terms of skill, you would always be at the top. Untouchable top.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. However, if somebody at Adobe had asked me, you know, when you learn Illustrator, or when everybody has always learned Illustrator, the open arrow is like select a point, and the closed arrow is select all. How anybody decided to switch that, you know, 25 years later is beyond me.
Oh, I didn't know that about that.
No, it's kind of like, you know, now red is green and green is red.
Yeah.
And beyond that,
that's really frustrating.
The customizable toolbar, I change without knowing that I'm changing it. So then I'm going to use the open and close, and that's wrong, and it's in the wrong place. So it's too easy to customize, and I'm messing up constantly. And the benefit, I mean, the good part about it is that I'm messing up in the window at Wonderground constantly. So that's awesome.
You're a pro, don't worry. Nobody will know.
Well, it doesn't look so graceful from my point of view. When I don't even know where the tools are.
Okay. You're using your own machine?
I am, yeah. I'm just,
oh my God.
And yeah, things are changing all the time because I'm switching it, but it's not like, do you want to change? No, you just drag the tools and they change. I can't find anything. So there you go.
I think this is a great point of a lesson for people who are listening, is like, even after 25 years, you will never completely learn your trade.
No, yeah. Absolutely not. No, absolutely not.
And I think it's great that I know you said that you found graphic design after college, but I think it's good to highlight that if you choose something in life, it's never too late to change it if it's something that you decide isn't really for you. I know a lot of people who have changed careers like many years after college or even after grad school, and they're very happy now. So I think that's something to really highlight that you should.
I actually think beyond that, if I hadn't changed, you know, what I do, it's even the field is constantly changing. So if I wasn't open to changing all the time, I'd be out of a job. Because really, I'm an illustrator. Even though I've trained as a graphic designer, if I don't get graphic design jobs anymore, there's a lot less of them. And most of my jobs are illustration jobs. So.
I just need to clarify. When you say illustration work, you're still working in vectors, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So technically it's illustration instead of graphic design now, right?
Yeah.
That's what I feel like too. And then I was taking some art classes when I was like trying to get my footing again after changing careers.
Yeah.
I took a class, and basically the point that my instructor was always driving at is the field is always like, your tools will always be changing, but if you have the fundamentals, learning the new tools will be easy. There.
It's not easy for me.
Right, like you can still produce the artwork, and your only obstacle now is how does this tool work to make the same high quality image with
like, that is true. If you know where you're going for, you may. I mean, that's absolutely, I totally believe that.
Because color theory would never change.
That's right. Yeah. Unless someone decides to change red to green and green to red.
I'm sorry that happened to you, Jeff.
Thank you, me too.
Okay, Art, when you switched, was there any like inner struggles that you had through the process of changing out of history to art?
Yeah, I really struggled. I wasn't going to become an artist. So yeah, it was a struggle. Like, I didn't want to do it. I was really pretty adamant that I was not going to become an artist. So
how did you get past that?
I don't know. I think I'm still getting past that.
What? Jeff, you're not allowed to say that. Was there anybody that you met that really helped secure your place, like your confidence in believing that it's possible?
No. Honestly, no. I know that people have mentors and stuff now. I just really didn't have that. I really... my parents have been super supportive. My family's been super supportive. Everyone's really been super supportive, but not able to help me figure it out.
Well, I think nobody can help you figure it out. Like, that's everybody fights that by themselves, but there are people who are like cheering you on and they believe in you, so you believe in yourself. Like, for example, when I met you, I was right at the start of that transition from going from web development into something more art related.
Yeah.
And like you were one of those pivotal meetings I consider where I started to believe in myself. If Jeff believes in me, then I should believe in me.
Oh, and that's nice. Yeah. I like that. I like that a lot. I don't know. I honestly, I have a lot of people who I feel like believe in me, but I still don't feel that way. I really don't. I can't lie. I still am struggling with all of this. So,
wait, Tom, we should be his cheerleaders. You're such a no, great artist.
No,
I look up to that. You so much.
I'm not saying that. You're very sweet. But I mean, I have people doing that, but I, you know, I can't, it's my own thing, you know? Okay. I just don't feel, I still feel like what's that called? Like an imposter, you know?
Imposter syndrome. Mm.
Yeah. Tom knows.
Well. What did you say?
Imposter syndrome. That's yeah. Actually like that's like actually like a thing in psychology, where you feel like you're kind of just like fumbling your way through what you're doing or where you are. Like you don't feel like you actually belong where you are, even though many people tell you that you are and you have proven it over and over.
Oh my gosh, I have a mental illness, I guess.
It's not an illness. I wouldn't say that. It's a it's a syndrome.
Yeah, that sounds right.
But it's really, really common. Like even like big actors feel it. Like they've gone through it all, even time and time after.
Yeah, so that's, I guess that's where I'm at. I don't know if that I'll get over it or not. I don't know.
Well, I guess that's kind of...
You're still doing it. So even if you don't get over it, Jeff, you're still kicking butt.
Right.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I'm doing it. I am doing it. For this newest thing I'm doing is really... it's been my wife's creation. So I wouldn't say I'm doing it for her, but we're definitely doing it together. It's not me. It's together.
That's great, though.
That's still doing it. Yes. So, what does your day-to-day look like nowadays?
My day-to-day is I work out of the house. I wake up. I take care of the dog in the morning. I sit down and turn the TV on and work. And then I stop when it's time to eat. And I like to get out of the house to eat because I just feel like that's my break. Mm. So my wife and I will go out to eat, and then I'll come home. And sometimes I bring my computer in the car, and I work while she runs her errands. So she'll drive, and I'll just work in the car. And then I do a lot of work in the car. Yeah, we can be together and, like, you know, whatever. And then I'll come home, and I'll work, and then... We'll eat again, and then I'll work. And then when I feel like I can't create anymore, then I go to bed.
Oh, wow.
So you're...
And then I'll do a couple words on Words. That's kind of my...
Good break.
So on an average day, do you think you're working about 12 hours?
I generally work from like... 9 to 12, so that's like 3 hours, right? And then like 12 to, or like 1 to 6, so that's how many hours? Like 5 hours?
So you're doing your 8-hour day.
Yeah, it's 8 hours.
And then after dinner, I'll work from like, you know, 8 to 2.
Oh, that's another...
So, I don't know how many hours.
That's 6 hours, so that's 14 hours a day?
Maybe, that sounds all right.
Oh, that's a lot.
I mean... He says that, and I'm like, no, that sounds like what I do now.
Oh, yeah. Life.
But it's not like stressful where you have to, you feel like you're being watched as you do it. Like when you're sitting in an office, somebody's watching you. So it's like automatically harder. But when I'm at home, it's like, yeah, I'm doing my artwork, but I'm also like, I have MapleStory running or something, and like when I get tired, like I'll distract myself with 5 minutes of MapleStory or
Totally, that's absolutely true. When I started working at home, it was mostly so that I could see the kids. I wasn't necessarily like playing with them, but you know, I could see them and like and I could answer questions and I could watch them do something while I work, and just I was there. I've always been
present. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of the benefit. So I'm always home. I know what's going on. I just am not necessarily like participating in it, but I can work while people are talking. I can work while everything's going on. So it's not like I have to be in my own room. I generally work on the couch and am part of all the action.
How do you not get distracted?
I'm kind of a workaholic, so that's not that tough.
You get in the zone, in a sense.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. It's more like I have to get undistracted to get other stuff done. So that's not.
Wow, you have the opposite problem.
Distraction is not my problem.
So how do you, since you work from home and you're like, even though you're a workaholic, that motivation needs to come from somewhere. So what are things you do to like keep your creative skills sharp and just constantly feeling your need to learn, you know, like to improve?
Just by trial and error. That's kind of how I do it. I generally just want to do like, improving is just mostly like I get a job, I want it to look a certain way, figure out how I want it to look, and then learning how to get achieve that is kind of my, that's what I do, you know? So I push myself because I want to achieve what I see in my head.
So when I talk to new artists, right, they say, how do you, I don't even think I'm that good at watercolors, and people are like, how do you paint so well? And then I feel all I can say is like, well, I just practice a lot. But then they would say, you know, I try to, but it looks terrible. And when they tell me that, I think, okay, but how many times did you try, right?
Totally. That's all, yeah, that's my reaction too. You obviously didn't practice enough.
But too, it's then you, recently I've learned that when they say that they tried, and if they're giving up on the first couple of attempts, right? Let's say they want to draw a flower, but after trying to draw a flower 5 or 6 times, then they think it's hopeless for them, that they have no skill or talent. What is something you would recommend to get past that, like that fear of failure? Because obviously, like, you have to work through it too, right?
You know what you need? A deadline, because you don't have a choice.
That's true. I didn't, like, when I was going through the process again to learn to be a better artist, it's either become a better artist or run out of money. So, yeah.
Yeah, basically the same thing, yeah. If you don't have an option, if you're sitting there doing it and you have a option of do a watercolor flower or work at a bank, then it's easier to work at the bank for you, then you should work at a bank.
Oh, that's harsh. But it's so true. Like, that's not the advice I would want to give.
I had a kid yesterday who came in, and we had the, I used the bank because that's was part of the conversation I had yesterday. And a great kid. I really liked the kid. He reminded me of my son. He was the same age. And he wanted to know how to get into a career in art, and he was working at a bank. And I was like, you need to have an internship. You need to do this and you need to do that. And he's like, yeah, but I don't know. You know, I tried it and it didn't work. And eventually I realized that that's the problem, is that, you know, what we just had. I don't think he's really got it in him to do it. And so I said, I think you should probably work at the bank.
Oh, my God.
because it's hard. It's really, nice. Really hard. And he agreed that he wasn't that self-motivated. And I said, that's kind of a problem. You know, just being a professional, being in the career is not just about being able to draw. There's a lot of things you need. Self-motivation is kind of number one. So,
yeah. Do you think that in every person there is one thing that they will be self-motivated about?
Yes.
And I think, like, if they're trying to do art and it's not working out, then that's because they weren't supposed to be doing art. Like, there's exactly something else.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. I think that everybody's got the skills to be the best something. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily what you want. It's what you're good at is not necessarily what you want. And so that's the hard thing.
But if you want it enough, you'll work hard enough to get there.
Yeah. I don't necessarily agree with that, to be perfectly honest.
Really? Oh, why would you say that?
Because I think, you know, if you I don't think you can make yourself an artist if you don't have that natural skills or talent. I don't think you can make yourself do it. I think you can make yourself be an adequate one, but not a good one. Isn't that harsh? I'm sorry if that's harsh.
Wait, let's back up. I want to think about this. I think that in different words, if I'm thinking about myself, right? Because I didn't think I could be an artist, but I was always just really interested in it. And I think that interest was my lifeline. The fact that even though I didn't think I had the potential to be professional, I was just like, I wanted it so much.
Yeah.
That was what helped me get through all of the obstacles to be where I am now.
Okay. But it was tough for you, but you had an interest and you obviously had talent, right?
So it, I don't know if I'm talented.
Well, you're definitely talented. But when you were growing up, were you the worst drawer in the class?
No, but I also was at home drawing all the time.
Right. So that's, you know, nobody who is. Okay. So when my son was a played baseball when he was a kid, right? He wanted to be a professional baseball player. And we're like, that's never going to happen because you don't like to play baseball. You know, that's not what you're doing when you're at home. You know, that's not what you do in your free time. You just, it sounds good to you, but it's not you, you know? And it was obviously you because you're sitting at home drawing. You could have been doing lots of other things. Other kids were probably doing different stuff and you were sitting home drawing. So you needed to learn how to bring that to another level. You didn't have the confidence, which most people don't when they're good at it.
Because we're so aware.
Because you're aware, you know, you see best stuff that's better than yours and you realize you're not there yet. And so that never ends. And that's hard. People who, I think a lot of artists who come to me and they're like, I'm really, really good and let me show you, are generally not as good as the ones who are like, no, I'm not an artist. And the parents behind them or their friends are like, yes, they are. And those are the people who generally are really good because they know how far they have to go.
Yes, I agree. I guess so, if you were
saying that the people who are coming to me and saying I'm so good and don't necessarily have the talent aren't necessarily meant to be artists. Does that make sense?
Yes. I think talent and interest, though, may come together.
It's like a combination of it. You have to have some of it there and also want it enough to keep improving.
Yeah, right. Do you know anybody who's super, super bad and keeps on doing it over and over again? You generally don't do it if you're not, you don't have some skill.
I would say if there's somebody who really wants to improve at art, but they're not improving, it's because they're making the same mistake and they're drawing the same thing over and over and over without looking for ways to be better.
And that's the talent.
Being smart.
That's the talent.
You have to be smart about.
To me, like seeing what you want and improving on it is the talent. I mean, not everybody can do that. Some people can look at it and will never be able to translate a carrot into a carrot.
You know? Because they don't know where to improve or how to.
Or they don't, they just, it's that connection's not there. Not everybody can do it. And that's fine. I mean, honestly. That's great. Some people can do, I can't do math, and the people who can do math just are awesome. But I can't do it.
Yeah, you're not interested. I think at the end of the day, it's like, because you're not interested.
I'm not interested because it's so hard.
Being interested makes hard things easy.
I tried to get A's in math, and I did. Doesn't make me good at it. It just means I worked really.
Yeah, see, that's what I like to say about me and art is, like, I'm not that great. I worked really hard. Mm-hmm. Or people are like, Cindy, you're so smart. I was like, I'm not smart. Like, I don't perform. Like, in high school, I didn't perform the test, but I worked really hard to make sure my grades were satisfactory.
Okay, but you're not becoming this. You're not becoming an English person or a math person. Yeah. I don't know. That's funny. I'm actually really interested. I truly think that people who are great baseball players, are great mathematicians, are great everything, they have that natural talent.
I think when you say natural talent, to me it's translating as they already have that drive to become that. To be like interest and drive to become really good at something.
Right. Because like a pro baseball player has probably been playing every single day since they were a kid because they it's something they really want and they practice for. And versus someone saying just one day, oh, I think I'm going to be a pro baseball player, but they hadn't played for the last couple of years, he said, or they didn't have that talent drive.
That's true. Yeah. I guess, I totally see what you're saying, and I get that. For some reason, it seems to me that there are people who may want to do something and as hard as they try, they're not going to be great.
That's fair. I've seen, well, I guess that's high. I wonder if there's like studies out there. Cause I wonder, like, you know, some people growing up.
I was so curious.
Cause like someone, like, sometimes you'll know someone who's not the best singer. They're a little bit like, they don't have any pitch, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if they had trained for years and years, if that would make them a lot better in the long run. Maybe not as great as, like, I kind of see where you're coming from. They wouldn't be Mariah Carey, but they would be a lot better. But maybe also because they had a late start too in practicing. But versus someone. But
yeah. I also think that to be a pop star, singing is kind of one of like many assets, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
but they would.
You have to have all of those things. Yeah. Just because you're a good singer doesn't make you a great pop star.
Yeah, that's true. And they'd probably be at a disadvantage versus someone who was born with a better voice and who had pitch. So I can see where you're coming from.
Yeah, totally. Yes. For sure. Singing is good. But my son's a singer. So that all works for me too.
So I'm like trying to think about this. If I was someone listening to this conversation, like looking for motivation, I think a really good way to spin this is like, like, let's say that you are, let's say you're really interested in science, right? Maybe you're not going to be Einstein, but if you work really hard, you can still contribute to science.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree. Yes. I absolutely agree. But so I would urge somebody to dig deep inside and see what they're the best at. You know, if you were like, as a kid, if you're in a classroom of kids and the kid who is not doing well in school, it's probably really good at something else. Like, he's probably funny, you know? He's probably entertaining to other kids or social. So they should probably not worry about whatever that subject is. They should probably look about the strengths they have with dealing with people or, you know, engaging people, charismatic, or, you know, maybe they're out in the corner drawing and that's their thing. I think you can't just break it down into I'm good at math, I'm good at art, or I'm good at sports, you know?
Yeah.
Lots of other talents out there.
Absolutely. And like, school is not for everybody.
Yeah, right. Totally.
But make sure that it's something that you still enjoy versus like, oh, I'm really good at math, but I hate math. There's no need for you to go into it.
Right, right. And, you know, maybe you're really good at math, but you're also not somebody who can sit in a room and do, you know, solve problems all day. So maybe you're like a math administrator or something. You know, I think there's just lots of different things out there.
Right, and the only way you're going to figure it out is if you go out into the world and, like, try it.
Totally. Yeah. Because I tell you, I bet 90% of the jobs out there, nobody knows of. And you can't say as a kid, I want to be the guy who does the artwork behind the animation that nobody knows who they are. You know, nobody says they want to be that.
Yeah, actually, when I was little, I had no interest in starting a business, like, zero. People would ask me, and I remember 5, 6, 7, 8, right?
Yeah.
I was like, no, I don't want to be a business owner because I don't want to sit there and do all of the paperwork. Like, right. I want to be the one who gets to do the thing.
Totally.
Absolutely. And look at me now. I run a business.
Totally. No, that's absolutely right. And obviously you have that skill, and it's not what you want, but it's what you can do.
Yeah. Okay, so what is the best advice that you've ever received? Like, I think you've given a lot of really great advice to our listeners, but what is something that you've received?
Honestly, my best advice is kind of what I'm giving, or I'm trying not to. It sounds like I'm a dream killer, however. But I think my best advice was the advice I got to give up all this other stuff I was trying to do and just do what I'm naturally good at and become an artist and not worry about what you want and what you think you want. Just do what you can do and you will be successful.
So do you enjoy what you're doing?
Yes, but it's not my passion. No, truly, honestly, I'll tell you the truth. I love what I'm doing, but it's not my passion. It's not like what I think about when I'm not working.
Oh, I see.
I love working. I love solving the problem, but it wouldn't matter if it was Mickey Mouse or if it was like, designing a car brush, or a sports medicine packet. I like solving the problem is what I enjoy.
Oh, I see.
You know, that's what actually, I have this theory that the best artists are really good, not just at art, but they're good learner, like good at learning. Because when I was doing art for websites, one of my favorite things was like when I was building a website was I got to learn all about whatever the site I was creating was for, like whether it be like driving, like road laws or nonprofit, like organizations for kids, and you just learn how the world works. And to me, that was really interesting enough to keep me on the project.
Totally, absolutely. Everything's interesting if you investigate it enough, you know.
Yeah, and it's using the ability to problem solve and to put like ideas together and that make the artist stand out from one another. Like the ability to make an artwork stand out over another artwork is the artist's ability to problem solve. And like you have a concept in your head, what elements in the artwork contribute to this point that you're trying to drive, right?
I 100% agree. And I think that's one of the things that unless somebody tells you, you don't realize whenever you're creating something, you are communicating to the viewer. It's not just looking pretty.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that just gets lost in a lot of, the world just doesn't hear that part of it or doesn't know it. And unless you are told or taught that, you don't know that's what's happening.
Yes, I didn't, like there is that stigma that artists are not that smart.
Uh-huh.
But now that I'm a lot deeper into the profession, I actually think artists are some of the smartest people that you will meet.
I agree.
Yeah, they know just so much about everything.
Totally, it's true. And you know, you need to know what you're talking about. It's not. I really think that a problem with a lot of people, like growing up, I want to be an artist, is they think they get to do whatever they want, whenever they want, and it's all about them. And really, none of it is. It's all about the viewer. Yeah,
exactly. The artwork
has nothing to do with me. Like nothing I do has to do with me. I mean, it's obviously my point of view, but it's not trying to connect to myself. So,
yeah. Tom,
yes,
I just actually was really curious because you draw, but like you're not as far into it as me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. But I just was wondering that when we had these conversations with other artists, what you think, like what was your first impression about what artists do, and then how has it changed in the like last seven interviews?
That's a great question.
I caught her palm again, Vanessa.
That's okay. I think I've always felt like artists work long hours, and I feel like that's been confirmed with each interview, how hard each artist works, for sure. Even more so, I would not expect like 14 hours a day, but it makes sense because you are working on your own terms. I think it's interesting for me to hear artists who a lot of people think are amazing and great still struggle and think that they're not where they should be yet. And I find that very interesting. But at the same time, it kind of, it's, how do I say it? It's like, it kind of encouraging in a sense, because a lot of that kind of shines how a lot of people don't really see how great they are, I guess, even though a lot of other people are telling them. So it's not just one, it makes people feel less alone, I think, if that makes sense.
I would just assume everybody feels that way. I mean, is that, that's not limited to, you mentioned actors. It's not artists and actors. I mean, it's right. Unqualified. What we do is a little bit unqualifiable. Like if you are working at a sales job and you hit a number, then you succeeded.
Oh, that's true.
I don't know if that's part of it. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I feel like any person that I've met who's very confident in their own success and they, you know, they want it.
Uh-huh.
And then there's something to say about that type of person, you know, the type of person that they are.
Yeah.
Like they're, when, even on the business side, right, I'm looking at my numbers and even though compared to 2 years ago, my numbers are much better.
Mm-hmm.
All I can see is how much distance I have to go.
Left, yeah, totally.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm always looking for ways to fix that equation. Like maybe I'm making X amount of money, but like, look at my health. I got sick over it, right? So how do you balance that work life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you figure it out, let me know.
I was going to ask you, what can you say about that, Jeff?
I just integrate. Well, look at me. So my daughter helps me and my wife works full time now with me. So I've more just taken my personal life and put it into my work. It's my work has sucked more than me into it now.
Aww. But at least it's a group effort.
Totally. Oh, no, it's fantastic. Yeah. It's
given the group effort is the key.
It's totally true. And, you know, it gives us something to do. On the weekends, we'd probably go to a movie or something. Now we're packing up the car and selling stuff somewhere. But we've met so many great people. We have fun. We're producing something rather than taking something, which I think is valuable. I didn't know how valuable that was to me until I started as an adult looking around. I really care that I'm producing rather than taking most of the time.
Yeah. And now when I'm at these conventions, because I have like, I'm there for work, so I have income. So I'm more excited to spend it all on my friend and like the people doing cool things.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's, I didn't have any of that. I've gotten a lot doing the conventions and doing the shows. I've gotten a lot out of that. And Instagram too. It's really changed. I used to be kind of insular and work with my clients and everything, but this is something different. This is really a great, great change in at least my life. I don't know if it's affected everybody the same, but I feel so much more connected to so many more people than I ever have.
Yeah, same. There are actually some people I talk with where they don't find the same kind of success at conventions. And that's, there are usually reasons for that. They're not interested in the networking. They're not interested in feeling vulnerable. You know, like to be on a convention in a booth with all of your artwork out on display, it puts you in a very vulnerable place. There are some people who don't enjoy that feeling.
And well, do you enjoy that vulnerable feeling? We do it, but I don't like it.
You don't like it? You know, I actually really enjoy being on the convention scene because what I've learned is people respond in very positive ways. Like once in a while, I'll get that customer who like gives me a hard time.
Yeah, totally.
But that's just one in very, you know, like that's a very few number in so much more positive responses.
But so don't you think that's, you're not feeling as vulnerable then? That's a gross feeling, I think, feeling vulnerable and people coming and like making you feel bad about yourself. Mm. And that happened a lot more in the beginning and I've probably improved, but I used to get a lot of that and that was, I really, that's bad. It's a bad feeling.
Yeah, but like, I think part of why it feels so good now is because I've reworked that formula so many times to get that kind of response that I want. So, like, I'm a problem solver. I like challenges, right?
Yeah.
Right. So the storefront is just one more problem that can be worked out.
That is true. You know what? That's true. The best thing to improve your art is to listen to people bag on you.
Yeah.
That is totally true.
That's or awesome. The opposite.
I mean, it actually helps more when people criticize you than if people say good things.
In that case, Jeff. Jeff, I think you could use a lot of improving everywhere.
You know, it's the people who, well, actually not ever. Recently, somebody who was just so incredibly rude. And looking back, and I'm trying to be pretty, I do try to be pretty like objective about it and put myself in their point of view and like, what was their motivation behind saying that? And like, I don't see one in this particular case. I truly don't see the.
You're not obligated to.
No, I don't see the. I don't see the. Their motivation, I think, clearly was to just break me down.
Yeah, you'll get those.
Why? I don't understand those people.
It gives them joy.
Isn't that funny? I think.
But you know what? It's actually a lot of fun. Well, like someone comes with bad intentions. It's really fun to have a conversation with them and then to like kind of verbally push them into a corner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I get a lot of fun out of that because it's like they're trying to be in control, but I'm so confident in the hard work that I put in that I can push back really hard.
Oh, that's good for you. I can't. I just shrinkle.
No, I don't think so. I can't imagine that, Jeff. I actually can't imagine anyone like going up to you and trying to put you down. You're so nice.
Well, then I guess that's my problem. Just take it. I'm like, okay.
People who put other people down just to break them down usually are like going through something and feel the need to take it out on someone else. So it's usually not as personal, but it's hard not to feel that way.
Totally. Yeah. No, logically, I can see that. Emotionally, it's pretty tough.
It's very tough for sure. Because being put down in any way, no one likes that. So
no, especially when, you know, just like you're saying, you try to learn stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I try and take it all like, okay, so what's their point? Like, what do I have to learn from this? And sometimes, like just recently, I was like, I don't think I can learn anything.
That's okay. Yeah. It's okay to be angry. There's some customers that I interact with where I'm like, when I recall the incident, I still get really frustrated.
Totally, yeah.
But it's like, I think it's fair game. Like, if you're going to be dumb, I'm allowed to be angry about you for a long time.
20 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then okay, so. Win. No, they won't win.
If they're in your mind for years and years.
That's how I feel. They totally won.
Yeah. So you have to. They're not worth thinking about if
yeah.
So.
Yeah. But they win if you're thinking about them.
Yes. So that's. Fight back. Don't let them win.
What, like to our listeners, what are we trying to prove right now?
Well, one thing I did want to go back on is like the idea that both of you guys keep wanting to find ways to improve because you feel like you guys have a long way to go. I think that is something important to highlight for people who feel like they are not good enough right now. I think that is a good trait as long as you aren't discouraged and it pushes you to keep improving. So I don't, mm-hmm. I want to, so if anybody feels like they're not good, as long as you feel like there's room for you to keep changing and growing, that's not such a bad thing to have. As long as it doesn't break you down completely. Don't break yourself down like other people break
yeah,
other people.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And it's okay to feel tired and discouraged.
Totally.
Yes. Yeah. As long as you yeah, don't stop.
That's basically the job.
Yeah. Don't scare people away.
But as long as you keep going and don't stop. You can be discouraged. You can take a break, but just don't stop completely. And
yeah. You know what? I do think that in this world that we're in, we get so many sweet, positive, really, really great feedback. And I don't know if you work at the bank, if people are coming up to you and telling you how much they enjoy your work. I mean, you know, so it's
I really like how you tell you're a good
bank. Yeah, totally. I mean, it's really overwhelming how sweet people are in general, you know, mine, except for the people that we were just talking about. I can't imagine. You get so much you know, approval and stuff. And I think it kind of, like I'm saying, it kind of, your head kind of drowns it out. But, like, mm-hmm. how nice that we
get public. It is really nice.
Yeah, aww. It's really, really nice.
That's interesting. You kind of get numb to it, would you say?
You're I think so. Yeah, probably, because then I think it's happening so that maybe it's not true, you know?
Oh, back to imposter syndrome.
That's your imposter syndrome.
Right back to imposter syndrome.
But how nice. I mean, it is so nice that people are so sweet all the time.
Right, really, and really nice. There's not very many environments where you can openly get that, you know?
No, absolutely yeah. not. We're really, really lucky.
That's what I keep saying. Like, I try to remind myself that the fact that I can run this art business and that I can show up and only get positive responses is something very lucky.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I, like, always do my best to show my fans and people following me on Instagram how grateful I am. Like, that is, if anything, at the end of the day, that is my to show appreciation.
Yes.
And you know, that comes at, like, that reads very positively, and it actually comes back full because then they want to support you more, right? They feel appreciated in their support and et cetera.
Yes, but I don't want to seem pandering. So that's the another thing. So, like, I don't want to be like, oh, yeah, I really, really appreciate you as, like, a marketing ploy. You know?
It's
so
not
that's
a marketing ploy. Leave it to Jeff to spin everything in that way.
I'm not as negative as it sounds. I'm really, really not.
He's not, though.
Like, I'm really not. I'm just constructive, like, honesty is kind of my thing.
Right. To be constructive and to be smart about the steps that you take in growing your business.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very yeah. important.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, it's hard. I think everybody sees, you know, you do something and you see a success and you think that it's, I can do that, you know. I used to think that, I watched the Olympics and think that I was going to, if I just swam a little bit more every day, I'd be an Olympian. And it's just not, that's just not, you know, it's not realistic. There's so much hard work that you don't see. And I certainly could never do that. But I think it gets frustrating when it doesn't just happen easily because nobody sees the hard part of it. You know, being an artist, going to the show, that's all entertainment. I mean, that's like you only put out your best face, you know, there's so much.
Nobody sees the exhaustion or like the 2 hours of sleep that you got the night before. Or
totally not.
Yes, the week's worth of
It's show business a little bit. Yeah. So you're showing, you know, you're being positive and putting out your best side, but it's certainly not the case all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. I like kind of wanted so running low on time, but I don't want to end on such a bad note. Like,
okay.
So Jeff, what is your favorite? Oh,
I have a question, a final question.
Okay. Wait, one more then. What is your favorite thing about being at a convention floor and doing your thing, like exhibiting your art?
Meeting the people, which is exactly the reason why I didn't want to do it for so long, but because I was afraid. But I love meeting the people. I feel like we touched on a little. I feel like I've met so many really great people that I never would have met, and just by people coming by and talking, and it's not about the selling; it's about just the interaction. So that's my favorite part.
Yeah. Would you say that you were actually like having stage fright a little bit before DesignerCon?
It wasn't necessarily DesignerCon, necessarily the turning point, but in the beginning, yes, for sure. Before I started doing any shows of my own, I would do events at Disney, like where I did something for them and then I'd do signings and stuff like that. That scared me to death.
Oh, but so, you're such a natural now.
There's nothing natural about it, but it's just practice, like everything else, just practice and feeling you know, feeling okay about it and enjoying it and just getting over the scared part and just letting go and just enjoy it.
Yeah, I can say similarly. When I started streaming on Twitch, I used to shake and get sweaty before I hit go live and then mm-hmm. for like at least a half hour in, and then after like a couple of weeks it's natural. So it all takes practice, and it's okay yeah. to be scared, I think, because you'll get good at it.
Totally, absolutely. And you won't get anywhere from that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the point we try to drive to all of our listeners, is that you're gonna be scared, but you just gotta go do it.
Totally.
Yes. Yeah.
And with that, we have one last question for you.
Okay.
Well, Vanessa. Well, two questions. Where can people find you online?
At www.jeffgranitodesigns.com.
Jeff Granito Designs, all one word, right? Granito Designs, and we'll include that in the link description of our website as well. And last question, this is very important to me. What type of dog do you have, and what's their name?
This is a great. I'm going to talk about this. We have a golden retriever, mm-hmm. A cream one. This now, and mm-hmm. and her name is, and she's relatively new. We adopted her recently.
What's her name again? Did you cut up briefly?
Oh, sorry, Coco.
Coco, the golden retriever.
The breeder names every. Litter, you call it, right? Every litter, yeah. Like by theme, you know. Uh-huh. And the theme of this litter was designer. Oh. So she was named after Coco Chanel.
Oh, interesting.
Which is much fancier than, but she's Coco. We adopted.
Thank you. I was thinking about it because you mentioned your dog in the beginning, and the whole time I was like, what's his dog's name? What type of dog is it? I need to know.
We had three dogs. We had three dogs, a golden retriever and two shih tzus, and they all recently passed away.
Aww.
All at one time within 3 months.
I'm sorry to hear that.
It was really tragic. Yeah. And so it just so happened that one of my family's members needed to get rid of their dog.
Mm-hmm.
We're more than happy to take care of her. So it all kind of worked out.
That's sweet. Yeah. And I hear when like one dog dies, another one usually follows pretty soon after with heartbreak. So
I had heard that, and isn't that horrible? Yeah. It was horrible.
I had a friend whose family always adopted dogs. I think they had 7 dogs, and within a month, 4 of them passed away week after week because they were just so sad. So, but at least you have Coco now, and you're taking care of her. And
yeah, it's awesome. She's the sweetest. She's very, very sweet.
Thank you for answering.
Yeah, no problem. My pleasure. I'll talk about Coco all the time.
And now, Jeff, you get to help us close out with the Just Press Start and Go.
Okay.
And then
ready?
We count. Are we saying it together? No, you get to say it by yourself.
I wanted a solo, so this is.
Yeah, you're going to solo this. So I guess, do you want us to count down for you, or you can just?
You can count down. That makes it more dramatic.
Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1.
Just press start and go.
Yay! Thanks, Jeff, for your time. And
thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the 7th episode of EXP Boosting. Next time, Cindy and I will be doing a belated New Year's episode, recapping and talking about some of the things that we accomplished and tried last year, especially the things that were a little out of our comfort zone. If you want to see more of us, you can check out our website at expboosting.com or check out our Instagram and Twitter. We both want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for listening and supporting us this past year. We wish you a very happy new year and are excited to see what 2019 brings us. Take care.